The stats, the salt, the sanity, and every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Was that a Pinocchio?
One sky to right. Deep and gone! Miguel Cabrera's 350th as a Tiger!
We let Rusty lead it off last week, but, you know, I'm not willing to relinquish the host duties. I am the voice of reason on the show, Eric Dorsch. I want to thank you for all listening. We got a lot to cover. Opening day a couple days ago, so much fun. I know we all enjoyed Miggy's double turned into a home run kind of thing. It was just so much fun. And honestly, you expect a whiteout for like Red Wings games. You don't necessarily expect it for a Comerica opening day game, but that's what we got. And all the same, it was fun. Sergeant Salty sitting there waiting anxiously to talk about all this. How are we doing today, Jay?
I'm good. The whiteout is weird. Out of all the days they had to pick, can we just give someone in Detroit a decent day? Michigan goes down in the same week it snows on opening day. We just can't in Detroit. But I'm good. I feel like Detroit's suffering right now.
And one day I'm going to have him calculate this. Russ Ivanek, how many times on opening day we've had snow? Because I feel like it happens a lot.
It sure does. And I'm just going to blame the whole Mickey home run on Mother Nature playing an April Fool's joke. Absolutely. I mean, it's right there. It's, oh man, that was funny. It's, yeah, though, we've already got the highlight of the season. One game out of 162.
One game, man. Yeah. Well, you know what, though? Get the fun stuff out of the way. That way we can be prepared for the torture. We know we're at the top of the hill. We're going to watch it go all the way back down to the bottom. So it's fine. And there's snow, so it'll be a nice, comfortable sled ride. So it'll be a good time. Honestly, to me right now, a little bit of old news, but biggest April Fool's joke might be long, long time NCAA basketball coach Roy Williams announced, I'm retiring. And everybody at UNC is going, please say April Fool's. Please say April Fool's. Please say April Fool's.
So, say psych.
Yeah, say psych. Make a joke for the first time in your career. Make a joke. So we'll see what happens. What isn't a joke, and I think it kind of is a little bit of a joke, NFL met, talked, and decided, you know what? 16 is not enough. We're going to make you guys play one more game. So it's official 17-game season for the NFL. And, I mean, Russ brought up a great point, which we'll get to in a second, but I really just kind of want to get the first reactions here. So, I mean, for me, my first reaction is that, okay, great, it just is one more loss on the Lions scorecard this year. But I look at it from the fun perspective of the playoff implication of that's one more game for these guys who may be on the fence to have one last chance. So it's fun from that aspect, but if you're an NFL player who's consistently playing into the postseason year after year, cough, cough, Tom Brady, I don't know that you want another game. I don't know that you really, like, you're looking forward to that. And it is almost going to reach that point where some of these older guys or some of these veterans who played well, maybe looking at that schedule and just being like, you know, week 7, we're playing this team. I think I'm going to go on vacation. I think I'm just going to take, because you know what? We have the bye week backed up into it. I might just take a 2-week vacation. We're not going to lose to that team. So I'll just go sit down because some of these guys really might need it, Jay.
That's what people are going to have to, I think they're going to start doing. There's going to be a systematic approach to like snap limitations almost. Like they have to try to figure out like, all right, this is checkers now. It's not chess. Or no, this is chess. It's not checkers now. We have to like manipulate what we're doing to make it and survive. First blush, I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I kind of look at it from a business perspective. Yes, are your stadiums open and people are employed and you got more concessions, you got parking lots, you got, you know, there's some business ramifications for this, but I've got some really fuzzy math to throw at this. And I think Russ will get a kick out of it. In my mind, adding an extra game is 16, we have, plus 1, okay, now 17, minus 0.0002 equals millions. And it's fuzzy math because it doesn't make sense, but all the actual issues of why I hate it are basically marginalized to 0.0002 because it's they're raking in millions of dollars by doing this. They don't care about injury. They don't care about the structure of having to limit people's snaps. I feel like it shows that it's very greedy. And that's what I take away out of adding another game. Because I don't think they care about anyone griping about it. They're still going to do it because they're going to make millions of dollars because of it. So I think you're dead right on limiting people from doing stuff. But I think they don't care about any of the concerns that people will raise as well.
Now, there's a lot of reasons to hate this. And the fact that the NFL is putting money above the product is a big part of one of them. But before we dump on it too much, I want to bring up one good point. Because there's one positive. There's exactly one reason to love this. 0-16 is no longer the worst you can do in a season.
There it is.
There's the silver lining. The Lions now, soon, hopefully, hey, the Jets are a thing, might not have the worst record in NFL history. We have a chance. That's what hope feels like in Detroit.
Hey, we're tied right now. We're tied with another team, so we're okay.
We're tied. But we have the awful designation of being the first expansion team or non-expansion team to do it, which hurts.
You got to live with it. But Russ, when we brought up the topic, you brought up a really good point, and I am interested. I'm interested to see how you feel about it, especially being the numbers guy, the guy that looks at all this. And it gives one extra game for records to be broken. I mean, but I want to bring up an interesting point because I watched this movie the other day. It's one of my favorite movies. It's a movie called 61. It's the story of Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris when they were competing for the home run record. And for about 20, 30 years, I think it was close to 25 years, Mickey Mantle had the home run record at 61. But it had an asterisk on it because at the time he played, I believe it was 8 games more than Babe Ruth did when Babe Ruth broke the record or set the record. So for the longest time, they didn't accept it. Well, we're kind of looking at that now. All these records were set on a 16-game thing. If you get to that 17th game and you're 50 yards shy of a single-season rushing or receiving or passing yards or touchdowns, I get a record's a record, Russ, and it's always be that way. But at the same time, for my opinion, it doesn't hold that asterisk because you didn't do it in the same amount of time it took LaDainian Tomlinson to rush for the single season touchdown record, or it took Peyton Manning to throw for the touchdown record.
Yet another reason why efficiency metrics are what matter. but I guess my counterpoint is after a little bit, no one made that stink about increasing to 16 games from 14. When Tampa Bay went 0-14, obviously there was 14 games in that season, right? And all kinds of records are being shattered, and we're seeing continuously all kinds of records are being shattered anyways. Because, hey, players are getting bigger and stronger and more athletic as human nature does, right? But we're going to see them faster. You're exactly right. We're going to see them faster about everything. And maybe in about 10 years, we're going to see more and more career records fall. Drew Brees, right, now has the passing yard record. Took him 20 seasons to get there. With 17 games, that same amount of time is only 18.8 seasons. Yeah, we're splitting hairs, but that's a season and a half with maybe a couple injuries here and there that he doesn't have to play to get to that same record.
Well, but also people are playing longer now. 20 seasons is considered Iron Man if you go back 10 years in the NFL. Back then, I get the league average is like 3 years or something like that. We're not talking about that. Yep. We're talking about if you're going to be in contention to break records, you had to have had a real career. But back then, a 10, 12, 13-year career was considered – you went a good while in the NFL. So, and think about it back in the day, like Jim Brown played like 8 years and he rushed for 20,000 yards or something like that. So,
right. And now he'd be able to rush for 25,000 because he has an extra game to do it.
Oh my gosh.
See, I hate this. I hate this because like, it's almost like when we're getting older, we're like, well, back in our day when we only had 16 games, because like, if this just keeps happening, everything's always beaten. And I just like, I feel like it loses its luster. Like at a certain point, it's like less is more, man. But like be more consistent. But
you actually walked into my wrap up question for this. So I want to go to it because I think we're all on the same page here. Like the Lions, it doesn't make a difference. It's just an extra game for us to get a better draft pick and that. But you said you hate this because remember back in my day. Well, speaking of that, at what point does it stop? At what point is it too much? Because again, the league, the NFL, the owners and all, they're looking at this from a dollar sign. It's dollar signs, dollar signs, dollar signs. We don't care at all. Mm-hmm. If Patrick Mahomes blows his arm out for us, but we make millions and millions, hey, guess what? It's the price you pay. He's going to be fine. He never has to work again. But, Jay, I guess to ask it, at what point is it too much? At what point do players have to look and go, okay, you went from 16 to 17 to 3 years later, we're playing 18 to 4 years later. Now you're talking about 20-game season. And before you know it, the season starts at the beginning of August, and it doesn't end until, you know, February. And then guess what? 4 months later, we have to report for training camp again.
I think your timeline is your issue. Like when you start – When you're up against your own ass, when you're running so fast that you're up against yourself, that's going to be the problem, and they'll have to fix it. But you might just need to get conservative billionaires who run these teams to not be so goddamn greedy, which I've never met one. Yeah. So
they don't exist. But see, you're running into that problem right now. Like in the NBA, you've got like 10 of the best players in the league aren't playing right now because they're broken down. Because guess what? They've literally just played a year straight of basketball between quarantine and then getting like a month and a half off at Russ, and then them going, hey, guess what? Season's starting up again, and it's all over again. And now they're doing a real full season, not as quarantined and all that. So it's, you're running into this thing of, you're going to, like, the NFL should be looking at this and seeing, this is what it looks like when you mess with something that players are accustomed to for over a decade. Look, there has been, you know, statements made that LeBron James is actually a robot. Well, guess what? That robot's in the shop for maintenance right now because he can't carry the load anymore. And that's not something you want to see when you have these big names, like I just mentioned, like Mahomes. You don't need Mahomes breaking down. Not only Kansas City, but the NFL in general does not need Patrick Mahomes breaking down. You need to tailor this kind of league to help that, to sell it, because that's what's going to end up, you know, making you money.
And I've got a proposal that addresses that. Mm-hmm. And stupid owners gives you more money. So it's a win-win. Ooh. And it's super simple. And it's so simple that it actually pisses me off that they didn't do this. It's a second bye week.
Okay.
Right? 17 games. We've already got an 18-week schedule now. One bye week. We were already struggling with injuries enough, right? There's a reason the NFL played 16 games and everyone else plays 162, right? Because it takes a week to get the body back ready from just this repeated car crashes, essentially. So you add a second bye week, it gives you more time to rest up. Now, not only is, hey, 1 week, one bye week, now you're splitting up. Maybe you're not playing more than 8 games without a week's rest somewhere in there. And it extends the entire season now to 19 weeks, which is an extra week of NFL Sunday Ticket. All of your ad revenue, sure, your teams aren't playing as much, but somebody is, right? Yeah. The whole league's not going to take a week off. It gave you a chance to get your players healthier and extend your money for your TV deals, which is the big deal. I mean, they're bringing in more money with that than they are from gate sales.
Well, I think it's also a great idea because, as we've seen as Lions fans, the bye week is not always in the middle of the season. They have them where you play 5 games and then take a bye week, and then you play 11 straight games. So it is a way, this is bad math, but in my head, I broke it up 6 by 6 by 6. And that gets you there. It's 18 games, but I'm still, you do something like that, and it'll really help the players because it's still a long haul in between, but it's a great breakup of you kind of get a break wait when you really need one. Got to do it again, and then you're going to get another one before the final push. And I see it as something you could easily do. You could easily work out schedules to break it up evenly that way.
I would pay a lot of money to be in the room because I have to imagine with all the people that are a part of the decision making, someone had to think of what Rush just said.
Hope.
I would pay so much money to know what the counterpoint to that is. Because if it's just, oh, no. It's like,
sorry, unfortunately, you're assuming that common sense is in these meetings, and that's unfortunately not going to happen. Speaking of paying a lot of money, how much money a year Jay, I'm going to give you this as a betting man. How much money a year do you think goes to Russ's hat budget? He's had 4 hats on since we started this show.
3 hats, mind you. 3 hats. But stay tuned.
By the way, I do love that you put the Slam Diego hat on right when I started talking about the home run record. That was very well worked out.
Oh, I have a whole slew of choices here, and I tried to be topical.
He's a man of many hats. Speaking of other hats, the NHL. No, I'm just trying to go.
But let me ask you, do you want to stay topical? And this we'll try to keep you updated on what he's wearing as we go along the show. Why Toronto?
Oh, because it was the next one. I didn't have anything fancy there. Gotcha. Sometimes you swing and miss. Yeah. It's opening day, folks.
It's opening day. Well, see,
speaking of bird watching,
I just decided to go consistent wearing a batting practice jersey, but I get what you're doing and I like it. I do like it. Look, Russ's idea is brilliant. It's perfect for what it is, but unfortunately, we're talking about the NFL. So if they can't find a way to financially make it the smartest decision, they're gonna throw it out regardless of how much common sense it makes. That's just what we've seen in this league. It's a very, very, I mean, at the end of the day, it is a business. And, you know, these companies aren't in it to, you know, to not take as much money as they can. So it's an unfortunate thing. But at the same time, look, at the end of the day, it's more football for us. It's an extra week, but it's still more football. So we're, of course, going to love it. I'm just not going to love it when our players are broken down after 12 weeks and they still have another five, six weeks to go. So I'm not going to love it for that aspect.
One closing point on this topic too. I don't have a good analogy. I was trying to think of one, but when you go this wet path, you can't come back from this. I don't think you could ever go less. So the fact that this didn't get like negotiated out of the CBA or whatever, like, when you open this fucking door, you're never going back. So we will never go back to 16 games.
I think they can go back. I personally do think they can go back. But I think it's going to be one of those things where they're going to have to – the NFL is going to look at them and almost be like, you have to at least give it a try. You know, same – Jay, you have kids. Like when they say they don't want to eat something, like your daughter doesn't want to eat eggs, you at least have to try it. You have to give it a try. If you don't like it, that's one thing. We just have to try. These are professional athletes and grown men. They'll give it a shot. But if the next couple of years don't pan out the way they want, these guys are going to look at these owners and be like, okay, you either get this back to how it was when it was working, or you're going to have to get replacement players. And it's happened in the past. We've seen replacement players play in the NFL. Sean Payton was a replacement player for the Chicago Bears when he actually was in a playing career. So I think there is a way to go back. We're going to have to see how much these owners and this NFL makes it worth these guys while to play that extra game. Cause you know, it's going to be there in some way.
I love that you just likened me to a greedy NFL owner as a parent. So now I'm a greedy parent, like eat your eggs or die, like buy this jersey.
Like, sorry. No.
It's a much more
complicated thought process, but that was the easiest way I could think to break it down. So, we're going to obviously have to dive into this over the next, like the schedule is going to come out. We're going to talk that through like we always do. NFL draft's coming up soon. Russ, I know, has a really great topic we're going to get to next week about the Lions and drafting and all that. And we might actually do it. We're still brainstorming it. We're trying to work it out, but you might actually get for the first time on this show, our first ever mock draft of the entire first round. And we're going to see how accurate everybody can be. That one's going to be a show into itself because we're going to all have to break it down. I think there'll probably be a lot of similarities, but there might be some differences along the way. So I'm excited to see it. Switching over to Justin's new favorite topic, because he has become the man on this. We're going to talk a little NBA. We're going to talk about a guy that I've been talking about for the last couple of years since he was at Duke. Coming out into the NBA, having a not so great rookie year just because of injury and then load managing. But now, kid, the training wheels are off. They are letting this guy go. And I kind of wanted to ask, Russ, has Zion Williamson quietly, and it's very quietly, crept his way into being in that best player in the league conversation? And I gave this to you guys. He's the first player to score 25 points with a 65% shooting percentage in four straight games since Shaq. In 95-96. Not a bad name to be compared to. And by the way, I bring that up to you. You don't hear Michael Jordan's name in there. You don't hear Kobe Bryant's name in there. You're not hearing Allen Iverson or LeBron James or Carmelo Anthony. You're hearing Shaq, which is a comparable thing for him because he is a big man. But at what point can we start putting Zion in that Greek freak, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James arena and actually saying that he can stack up with them and hold his own in that conversation?
I think the boring answer is, well, when he can play better defense.
Okay.
Because he's not a complete player yet, but he's getting there. And we're seeing you're seeing things to the point where I'm going to start calling him Stormbreaker, because he's all kinds of strong, right? Shaping up to be some kind of a god killer. However, he's 6'7". We all know he was forged without the handle, right? Like, he's a little short. But no, he's offensively, he's turning into one of the most unique and effective players in the NBA. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned not seeing guys like Jordan and Iverson and that with this kind of shooting percentage over four games. And you're not going to, because you're only going to get that kind of percentage dominating near the basket. Right. So, I mean, his 63% for the season is about equivalent expected points wise to shooting 42% from three.
Okay.
Which is what Steph is shooting right now.
Yeah, which is a phenomenal. So put that into,
So if you're talking per touch, that's about what we're talking. And that's what makes him so potent offensively. You think of Steph, you know, hey, Splash Brother, right? Just absolutely killing it from three. You have to be at that level of efficiency from two to run even with it. And he's doing it. And that doesn't happen anymore. You know, with the whole sprawl ball 3-and-D in space, you know, era that we're in right now, you have to be that kind of efficient. And there ain't many that do it, right? He's taking a ton of shots from two, but only from two. He's averaging 0.2 three-point attempts per game, by the way. But he's doing it to the tune of top 10 in points, right? Top 10 in field goals made per game. He's efficient. He's crazy good. I just need a little more from him defensively to put him in that greatest player in the league part. He's fun to watch, though. He's a unique, unique weapon right now.
Okay.
The other thing for me too is that, like, I was looking at it because I can't dive into the numbers just quite yet. I just got in the pool. I'm not swimming in the deep end yet. But, like, I'm also looking at it from, like, the media side, because the key word I think you used was quietly. Yeah. Like, if you go on NBA's Instagram, they post like 10 things a day. They've only posted 3 things about Zion in the past 2 weeks. And if he's that remarkable of a player, it's like, okay, pump him up. Like, I see the Jokic's and the Luka Doncic, and like, I have all the, and KD, he's screaming, I'm the MVP at Pistons bench just recently. It's like, if Zion is doing the math and he's getting there, like, I think he also needs to be pumped up by the league a little bit just to be like, yeah, he's here to stay. He's our newest toy in the shed. Let's check him out. I just feel like no one's really helping him out on that
end. Well, I think another reason too, and Russ, correct me if I'm wrong here. I think another reason why you're not seeing as much of the open offense when it comes to Zion is because of the situation he is. He's in on the Pelicans, and they have stuck him at that power forward position and said, stay. This is where we want you, because they have Brandon Ingram right now, who is at least a proven scorer in this league. Anything else can be questionable, but he's at least a proven scorer in this league. So Zion really, like, when you look at these guys like Giannis and LeBron and all these guys, the second they stepped on the floor with the team, the coaches said, okay, you're a small forward, but you go do whatever the hell you want. You want to bring the ball up the court? Go ahead. You want to be our center for a play? Go ahead and do it. With Zion, it gets the real feeling that the Pelicans are trying to, like, get him really trained into one spot, and then they'll start worrying about letting him branch out to other ways.
Well, that's 100% what's going on right now. I mean, let me pull up the exact numbers here, but because it's staggering how similar it is there, or how singular it is, rather.
Are they confining him to just certain areas of the court, basically?
So he attempts 16.2 field goals per game, right? 15.7 of them are from two, right? And in close, for the most part. So that's he's excelling there.
Absolutely. To clarify, he can shoot three-pointers. He's done it. He's capable of doing it. But
it's not Ben Simmons over here.
No. Like, he has the ability. I'm not saying that he, like, look out Steph Curry, but he's capable of going out and doing it at an effective level. The thing is, the Pelicans seem a little afraid of him falling into that recent thing of forwards where they have the ability to get down low and score every time with Will, but they get bored of doing that, and they want to – like Blake Griffin. He started working his way back to wanting to be able to shoot three-pointers effectively. And over time, he just never decided to go in the paint. So the Pelicans almost seem like they're trying to get him really, really trained on knowing you can do this every time, and in hopes of maybe he won't get obsessed with that three-point line like other guys have.
I actually see it the other way, because the whole moving out to the three-point line is, and I kind of touched on it earlier, 63% from two is the same as 42% from three,
mm-hmm.
right? It's 1.26 expected points. If you're so, if you're shooting less than 63% from two, that's not good, right? The more valuable shot is to dump out to someone who's shooting 40% from three.
Absolutely.
However, Zion is able to shoot 63% from two, and as we've seen over stretches, at least better than that. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. He shouldn't get pushed out to three because he's breaking the mold and he's doing the opposite of what the league typically is able to do from that position.
Yep.
So yeah, keep feeding him. I think they're trying to take advantage of the fact that, hey, he's doing this at an efficiency level that we don't see. Keep doing that. Less than just, hey, don't shoot out to three because of everyone. That's like typically, yes, is more efficient.
Yeah.
Not for him, even though he's a 35% 3-point shooter. Not awful, right?
There's
definitely
fair.
Worse ones.
Absolutely.
But yeah, he's money in close to the point where no one else is really close.
No, not even a little bit.
Like Rudy Gobert is, I think, the only other one close. He's very similar 2-point percentage wise. He takes like half as many 2-point attempts.
Mm-hmm.
So I need Zion on my social feed. I need people to start pumping his ass up so more people could be aware. Because then he'll be in the conversation with the other greats.
Well, and that leads into my before we move on from this topic, that leads into my thing. Russ, you kind of gave your opinion of what's it going to take, and that's better on the defensive end, which is insane to think about because Zion's made his YouTube highlights off of just blocking people. I mean, in summer league a year ago, he blocked a guy's shot and it went five rows into the stands like it was a volleyball. So it's that ability. But Jay, I guess for you, I mean, like you said, you're still kind of new. You're not ready in the deep end yet, but Zion and you at least know the other names. Giannis, LeBron, these guys, and you've seen them play. So Russ kind of gave an example, but I kind of want your example too of what's that last piece you need to see from Zion before you can say LeBron, Giannis, Zion, all very comparable.
I mean, I just feel like my issue for, again, just jumping in the pool. I'm in the kiddie pool with little floaties on. All right? I got Jumpman on my floaties, right? For me, it's the flair. It's the personality, and it's the social media and the attention. When you package all that up together with someone's actual abilities on a court, you have a superstar. You have someone you can market and throw on covers of video games and cereal boxes, and it's all the off the court stuff for me. Because then it draws attention to him, and then you turn on a Pels game, even though it's like Monday night at 10 o'clock and you got nothing else. Yeah, because Zion's playing. You know Zion. You just saw him in a car commercial pushing Geico or something. Like, I need the marketability for me, because then I'm going to be drawn to those games. Maybe I'm a sucker. Like, I fall for the
ad. Well, see, I'm right there with you. The marketability is something I like, but I also need to know that if he – like, this was for me, because, I was a Steph Curry fan. I still am. But I used to stay up to watch those games, to watch Steph Curry. But the problem was, early on in his career, one, he had injury problems. But two, the coaches were very strict. They stuck to his timing. Like, okay, you've been on the floor for 8 minutes. Get off. And even if he was, 6 for 6 from the three-point line, it was still get off. I need the Pelicans to realize this guy is a freak of nature athletically. If he's on a hot streak, don't sit him down. Let him play. Like, you're not necessarily knocking on the title door anytime soon. You need this guy to be the person that's going to keep you in games. So for me, it's that. You see these. Like, if Giannis and LeBron are playing well, they don't sit down. They play until either they want to sit down or until it reaches a point where it's like, okay, you need to sit for a minute. But they don't do that with Zion. Zion could start the game 6 for 6 with, three rebounds and like 4 blocks. As soon as they hit that time mark, it's okay, sit down. And it's like, that's not what you do with the lead player. The lead player plays. That's why he's your best player.
Is that Van Gundy over there running the show?
Could very well be. Oh, the Pelicans. Yes, it is. Yeah, so that's why it's a problem.
So it's Babcock to Austin Matthews. We need to unleash his ability and not.
Well, also don't
have him central in one spot.
Also, if you're Babcock, don't ask him what he thinks about his teammates, because that'll go poorly for him. All right. So, but as I was thinking about this, combing through NBA trade deadline was just last week, and they, you know, they were doing all these moves and all that. But it's an insignificant move, and how it sparked this question for me, I don't know, but it did. Pelicans shooting guard J.J. Redick was traded to the Dallas Mavericks, so he's on another great team, very comparable West Coast team. But a lot was made out of it because J.J. Redick said, I would be willing to be traded, but if you're going to do that, I'd like you to trade. He said the Nets, which I guess everybody wants to be on the Nets right now. But he said he wanted to be on the East Coast because his family, his wife and kids, still live in Brooklyn from when he was, you know, they bought a house there, and that's where they live. So he kind of wanted to be a little closer to them. And obviously Dallas is not much closer. But in doing so, I've been a J.J. Redick fan since his days at Duke. Surprise, surprise, if you haven't realized it by now, I'm a Duke fan.
Boo.
Yeah. God. But I looked at it, and it led to a Hall of Fame question. Because as we know, Russ is all about minimize the Hall of Fame. This shouldn't just be open enrollment. It should be requirements. But as I looked at it, and don't get me wrong, Russ, I'm not trying to say J.J. Redick's a candidate for the Hall of Fame. But when I look at this list... It starts to make the argument. And that is, I asked this on our Twitter, what is the requirement, if there is one, or requirements to qualify for the Hall of Fame? Is it rings and majors? You know, I put that in for golf. Is it individual stats? Is it being top 10 in a certain stat? And that's my reason for this question, is because as of right now, J.J. Redick needs 53 three-pointers to move into the top 10 all time in three pointers in the NBA history, with names that are made up of honestly 70% Hall of Famers. So it begged the question of, is that one little thing going to do it? But also kind of gets to refresh that statement of, what is the criteria to make it in the Hall of Fame? Because a lot of people these days believe it's the hardware, it's the rings and all that, but that's fine if that's what you think it is. But I hate to break it to you, if your argument is rings, Robert Horry's in the Hall of Fame because he's got 7 NBA championships because he played on Hall of Fame teams and contributed nothing. He retires with 7 points over his career. But if it's hardware, he was a small forward, but he played with the Houston Rockets when they had Hakeem Olajuwon, one of the greatest centers. He played on the Lakers teams with Kobe and Shaq. Yeah. He played on the Spurs teams with Tim Duncan. He has 7 championships because he was a role player on these teams. But if hardware is what does it, he's in. But on the other side, if hardware is what does it, Dan Marino can't be in the Hall of Fame. The guy's an all-time great passer. He has no rings. So hardware can't be it. Individual stats, that's great. That's phenomenal. Allen Iverson is in the Hall of Fame because of individual stats and what he did. Well, guess what? Stephon Marbury's in the Hall of Fame if it's for individual stats, too. That guy retired averaging like 29 points a game because he never passed the ball. So... But then that's the other thing, the individual or the all-time top 10 list. If that's the case, if Ray Allen, Steph Curry obviously will be in there one day, Reggie Miller, James Harden, Vince Carter, Paul Pierce, Jason Kidd, Dirk Nowitzki are all going to be in the Hall of Fame, and they did other things obviously, but they're all on that top 10 list. J.J. Redick's ahead of 4 of them if he gets those 53 pointers. How is he not in the conversation?
So it's first off, you make a great point with the titles, and I want to be on the record. I do not give a shit about how many titles or rings you
absolutely
have for the Hall of Fame.
That was more for all the other people in the world that say, how many rings does he have?
Oh, yeah.
So
no, you're right.
Yeah, changing my notes.
That's exactly the first place everybody goes. Like, is he a Hall of Fame? Well, how many rings does he have? Well, I don't know. How many other players did he play with?
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't happen anymore. You can't do it anymore. It isn't the 60s where one player on any sport can just drag a bunch of guys that they picked up at Walmart on the way over to a title.
Yeah.
That's not a thing anymore. Right. And basketball is the one place where you think, hey, maybe that can happen more because it's 5 players on the court at the time. Right. And they play most of the game. Each of them do. So yeah, one guy can really excel, but we've seen it now. I mean, look at the Nets we just talked about. You need 2 superstars to go anywhere. Right, Giannis is toiling away in Milwaukee. Is it because he's bad? Is it because he's not a Hall of Fame caliber guy? No, obviously not. It's because they can't pull off a single trade without spoiling themselves in the offseason again.
Mm-hmm.
It is brutal. So, yes, the first thing I do is I throw away titles. Hardware, individual hardware, get you into the conversation. And J.J. Redick's an interesting one because I get stuck up on, like, football, I think there should be more kickers and punters.
Absolutely.
Than there are.
Absolutely.
And they're specialty guys, right? But they're doing everything that their role asks.
Mm-hmm.
J.J. Redick is also a specialty guy, but he's one of five guys on the court at all times when he plays. So it's not like he gets to just jump on the court, take a shot, jump off the court. He's got to play defense too, right? He's got to do the other things that are involved in the game. So positions like that, it's harder for me to say, hey, yeah, specialist only good at one thing. You should be in the Hall. And that's why I look at more holistic things. So I'll go back, long story short, I go back to my one benchmark is, can I tell the story of this era without this player, right? Which by default means, hey, you have to, at least for some manner of time, be in the conversation for best player in the league. You don't necessarily have to be, right? You shouldn't be punished for being alive at the same time Michael Jordan was. But you got to be up there. You got to be, we have to be able to talk about you. You talk about Jordan, Pippen comes up, right? Isaiah Thomas comes up all the time, right? So you don't have to necessarily be the best. You don't have to necessarily lead in 3 points made or goals scored or rushing yards or whatever it may be. But you got to have something there. You got to build up and you have to be a story in the fabric of the game. And it has to be for more than like 5 years. I'm not saying his name, but you know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about. I wasn't going to go there. No, I got you.
Yeah, kind of that's the sustained success. 2 or 3 really good years get you a video game cover. It doesn't give you a plaque.
Yeah.
So for me, that's it. You are a central part of the story of the game, and it's for more than like 5, 6 years.
I've had two moments today of Rush for President 2024 because, like, he has knocked the shit out the park. I used to be, well, how many championships you got? That's all that matters. I don't care what you did individually. But I'm starting to change my tune. Also with the fact that because leagues are changing rules and changing, like NHL, look at the defensemen of 20 years ago versus now. You've got very tinier, faster, agile defensemen compared to the Chris Prongers of past. So for me, it's got to be everything. And Russ summarizes it perfectly with what is the story of your era. You have to have everything from start to finish to be able to be Hall of Fame worthy. It can't, because you have to understand what's happening during that time. How was the league set up? What are the rules? What do people favor? Is it rushing or is it everything's in the air? And like, I feel like you have to have everything. So I have removed myself from the how many championships group. And it's got to be a complete story from start to finish.
Well, so I was always kind of that thing of, like, there needed to be some hardware. Like, I think, like, when you're talking about Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, they have the numbers, they have the individual hardware, but they have the rings. I mean, you know, Peyton has 2 rings, Brady has about 30 by now. But that's, in my opinion, what always kept Drew Brees in the conversation, was he had the numbers, but Brees went and got himself a ring. He has a Super Bowl ring to keep him in it. Without that Super Bowl ring, it's very hard to keep Drew Brees in the conversation for one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, other than he just put up insane numbers. So for me, I was always a little on the hardware, but I think the hardware gets overinflated, because if you go by hardware, and this is no offense to this guy, I think he's one of the greatest basketball players to ever play. If you go by the hardware, Michael Jordan and LeBron James can combine their rings and Bill Russell still is ahead of them. So how is Bill Russell not the greatest basketball player of all time? It's that kind of thing. Hardware is great, but it doesn't define a Hall of Fame, which is an individual career. And Russ, I brought up your point the other day to someone about, can I tell the story without it? And on all honesty, that's what gets Allen Iverson in. Other than what he did, you can't tell the story of the last 20 years without Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson made it viable for you to be a smaller player and not be 6'4 and be a scorer in this league. So it's just, it's that kind of thing.
This is Muggsy Bogues erasure.
Muggsy Bogues. Justin, Muggsy Bogues is the reason you could have played in the NBA.
I believe Muggsy.
I'm going to take it. He's like five, fella.
He's a wee boy.
Oh, I'm looking up at him.
Well, 5'3". 5'3", 136.
So you're not looking up to him. You're looking down.
Okay, we're on equal playing field.
So you got some height on him, man. You're backing him down.
He's taking you to the fucking cleaners.
He is going to end you. Or like Earl Boykins from Eastern Michigan, who was like 5'5", and had to guard Yao Ming in one on one play, and it was hilarious. But
hey, Scott Gomez is my idol, there you go. Okay, so don't worry, I got someone on there ice for me.
But see, it's just that thing of trying to. I don't think, and I think we can all agree on this, I don't think there is a definitive answer to what is the checklist criteria, because it almost is, it's speculative just on that player. Each player kind of gets their own checklist because everybody, no one has the, like, there's no such thing as a uniform path to the Hall of Fame. You got to do it a million different ways. And yes, Russ, I knew who you were getting at, and I was saying, I was saying, well, you're kind of tilting in a little bit on that specialty guy who does one thing really good. We're not going to bring it up because I don't feel like having to pay him any more money. But I get what you're saying, and it makes for an interesting conversation of, because it's depending on what your criteria is, like you and I, Russ, one of us can have someone in the Hall of Fame, the other one doesn't, because it just doesn't equal up.
And that's the beauty of it, is we can both be right.
Absolutely.
That someone is Hall of Fame worthy. That's why it takes more than one vote to get in.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Moving on to probably the toughest topic of the night for us. Obviously, if you've been watching March Madness at all over the last couple weeks, it's been a very interesting thing. A lot of teams no one really saw coming, making a run. Obviously, UCLA, a play-in team, taking down Jay's Michigan State Spartans to get into the tournament, and they decided to just completely take out the entire mitten, beating the Michigan Wolverines on just a heartbreaker. I mean, I stayed up for every second of this. Michigan missing their last 8 shots. I loved the play at the end of the game. Would have loved to have seen it bend to a guy who didn't just miss back-to-back 3-pointers to end it, but that's just me. Listen, the Wagners are royalty in Ann Arbor after what his brother did for us and what he's done. It's a big thing. And obviously, Juwan Howard had a season like no other. The guy was the best coach in college basketball this year. As we sum it up, though, Gonzaga, the team that looks like the team to beat, still rolling strong. Gonzaga will take on UCLA. And then on the other side, kind of a surprise. Didn't see either of these teams, but Baylor will take on Houston in the Final Four. Just really quick to sum it up. I mean, Russ, I know the other night could not have been easy on you as well. Jay, I know you're slowly becoming a U of M basketball support.
Oh, whoa. There's a fine line.
I know. I said slowly becoming a basketball supporter, U of M basketball supporter in that tournament. Not saying you're switching over. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying you were enjoying watching the games for what they were. But Russ and I have been bleeding maize and blue for years now. So that's why I'm saying I can't imagine it was easy on Russ. Yours was financial gain. Russ was actually a vested interest.
Wait, no, I had both. I before I could gamble, I have enjoyed Michigan hoops.
Enjoyed.
I didn't use the word supported. I like to fancy it.
I didn't
it
use
once
the word supported. I said enjoyed.
I ain't writing a check to the
me
university
either,
anytime
though.
Soon. Trust me.
Oh, God.
Fair.
But Russ, obviously, I know it had to have been a tough one for you as well.
Yeah, it was incredibly painful. And the end of the game sticks out, probably because the last 2.5 minutes took about as long real world time as, you know, the 15 minutes prior game time. But that's where it was lost. It wasn't lost in the last couple of minutes. It shouldn't have even been that close. You didn't get to 50.
Yeah.
You didn't get to 50. That's a problem, right? You can't point to one shot when you can't get to 50 points in a collegiate basketball game. It's frustrating because they're athletic, right? And they can usually get it done. And Smith can find a way. And Wagner can find a way. And if all that fails, we'll just dump it down to Dickinson. But it drives me insane when I watch it that it's one of two things happen. The ball handler has it, and they either try and do some motion to where they can cut to the basket, or they can dump it down to Dickinson down low, and then everybody stops moving.
Yeah, I
saw that. And everyone sits around the perimeter and watches it. And earlier in the tournament, it was working out, right, just because they were too athletic. Dickinson was doing too damn good. And in the off chance that someone stood up to them, they could do it for longer. he ran out. UCLA trapped him down there. They let the ball kick down there. And then everyone else was sitting often on the far side of the court on the perimeter, and there was no kick-out option. So he's trapped there. They swarmed him. And by the time they tried to change their game and shoot more threes at the end of the game, it was awkward, right? Because you're not in that flow. This isn't your game. And it sucks. I think that athleticism will end up winning out. Hey, number one recruiting class in the nation, for whatever that's worth, coming in. They'll be back. Mm. But that sucked. Mm-hmm. And that sucked. It was not an entertaining game.
It did.
Frankly, to watch this, you know, movement, stagnation. Oh, and then a missed shot. It was painful. And I hope Gonzaga wins by 30.
Yeah.
I hope they just...
I can't pronounce his name, because we know I can't pronounce names. But UCLA's player couldn't miss once he got across half court.
Oh my God.
He had a night. He had a night, and it is great. But before we get to our predictions for that Final Four, I do want to ask you both, and I want you both to be bluntly honest here. This is not like we're out of this, so it's not going to hurt anyone's feelings because we don't get this chance. But Jay, if the game had happened the way we wanted and Michigan moves on, does Michigan have the steam and the talent to handle the number one overall Gonzaga?
I mean, I would say yes. I think if there's any team to take on Gonzaga, it would be them over Baylor and Houston on the other side. Michigan would have the best chance going up against them. I would have taken that. But the Big Ten has also dried me up by $500 this March Madness. So... fade me, because I haven't been right the whole time.
I'm doing a hat change here, and it's the Washington Nationals, but I'm wearing it upside down because it's not a W. It's definitely an L. I don't think they would have had the horses to run with Gonzaga. Yeah, I think Jay's right that they probably a fully healthy Michigan is the best team to do it. You bring in Livers, we can talk. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's not really many teams in the entire nation that I'd be willing to go, hey, we can talk on this. I picked Gonzaga to win the whole damn thing. I think they're going to go undefeated. Ken Pom's got them now, after recent tourney play, top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency. You know what that's meant in the past. It's meant championships.
Yeah.
And now they've worked themselves into that class. I'll be shocked if it's not Gonzaga winning at all. And that was the only thing that made me feel a little bit better when Michigan lost to UCLA. I went, they probably were going to lose in the next round anyways. And maybe that's me comforting myself. But that's how I saw it.
It is.
All right. Well,
talk about being blunt. Yeah. I like
that. All right. Well, we know where Russ stands, so we'll get to it real quick. I agree with Russ. I see this as being a Houston Gonzaga national championship. I think the Zags win. We're going to finally get a team go coast to coast, undefeated, number one seed. Not something we've seen in a long time. And I agree with you. I want that UCLA Gonzaga game to be such a blowout that like Gonzaga's towel boy gets to play point guard for the last 5 minutes. That's what I want to see. So Russ has the Zags. I have the Zags. Jay, your Final Four. What are you feeling here?
I'm hoping for Baylor Gonzaga. But it doesn't matter. Gonzaga has won and covered the spread 30 some odd games in a row. And Vegas keeps pumping their spread like 11, 12, 13, 14, 18 and a half when you're playing a low seed. Like I've made more money off of Gonzaga than I have on betting the Big Ten. So I'm going to put my money on the Zags.
I've made
like
more money
else.
Betting for a winning team rather than throwing my money into the shredder.
Hey, yes.
It's an interesting strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it plays out for him. Yeah, that's fine. Average Joe's gym, man. That's what you want to bet your money on. Absolutely. Look, at the end of the day, it would have been great to see Michigan on that final stage, being able to play for this. And I agree. With recruiting and all that, this isn't the last time we're going to see this team doing this. I don't think we're losing anybody this year. I don't know that anybody really – I mean, Livers, but I don't know that anybody had a big enough showing to where you can say Hunter Dickinson has to go to the NBA or Wagner has to go to the NBA. So you add in more talent coming with it, it's just going to make it an even deeper bench and a lot tougher to compete with this team. So it isn't the last time we're going to see it. But while we're talking about March Madness, I was thinking about this the other day, and it really made me wonder how everybody else feels about it. Is there just that sporting event? Because, you know, growing up, it's, you know, you sit on the couch with your parents, you're watching, you know, it's the Super Bowl, it's the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup. We're going to talk about it next week. The Masters is on. We've got the World Series, and there's all these big things. And it's, you love them, and they're great to see, but it almost feels like we're kind of programmed to say, oh, it's Masters Week, or, oh, it's March Madness. I have to turn on basketball. And not to say that it's not enjoyable. Listen, we're doing a sports podcast. Clearly, we love sports. But it made me wonder, is there that sporting event that it's reached a point now where you're really just watching it because you kind of been programmed to say, yeah, I got to put this on. But in reality, if it wasn't something like that, you would just kind of be like, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to turn on, you know, John and Kate plus eight or something.
Yeah, that is not the choice. It has never been A or Johnny K plus
yeah,
A.
Yeah.
It never will be.
But you know what I mean? Is that one? Because I guess I'll lead it off. For me, this is going to sound weird because we just spent a lot of time talking about this sport. For me, it's the NBA Finals. I love basketball. It's a sport I grew up playing, and I love the sport. It's amazing. But as I looked back at it and I really thought through it, the NBA is the one sport out of the major four that you could pretty much guess who's going to be in the NBA Finals at the start of the year. We've seen so many, like with the Bulls and the Lakers and the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors and all that it's year after year of the same thing. So really you're just watching an 82-game warm-up for the NBA Finals that we already know is going to happen. Whereas you look at the Stanley Cup, you guys will know better than I. I don't remember the last time a team repeated with the Stanley Cup.
Pittsburgh. I think that would have been Pittsburgh. I was trying to think of a more recent one.
My guess was going to be the Blackhawks. But I don't think they even repeated, because as far back as I can remember, it's the Red Wings in 97, 98. But I want to believe someone did it since then. But you look at that. You look at the World Series. I mean, the World Series might be the only sporting event where you can say, like, Kansas City won a World Series. The next year, they finished like dead last in their division. So it's just that thing of it is kind of like March Madness, where at the one shining moment, anyone can do it. Obviously, yes, we've seen Tom Brady in a lot of Super Bowls, but the change out for teams going to the Super Bowl is even fluctuates. We get a lot of variety over the years. So it makes it for that thing of like the NBA Finals, I'll still watch it because it's the best basketball available. But at the same time, I already know who's going to be there, or you have a pretty good idea of the team that's going to be there. So it's really just kind of ramping up for the inevitable, Jay.
All right. So I can respect the finals as a non-basketball watcher, just getting into it. I can understand that. Cause that is something where even when I wasn't following basketball, like I am now, I would just put it on and be like, hey, I watched the basketball game. Cause that's like something I don't say. Right. So I can understand that. For me, a sport, I don't think we've ever talked about this sport on this podcast before. And this is a huge sport of my dad's. And before, it was something I'd always watch with him. And now it's something where I'll grab a news clipping article or something. I'll go find something on Google of the sport because I just want to know. It's the Daytona 500. There's something special about Daytona 500 and NASCAR that my dad made it like a religion almost. And then I'll just be like, what did Danny Hamlin do? Okay, great. For 2 seconds, I'll be interested in something, and I don't know why I do it. And NASCAR can probably just go away, and no offense to NASCAR folks. I have zero interest in cars turning left. It is something that always just, I have, an inkling to go do it, and I don't
know
why. But
how addicted would you be if one day they decided to all turn right?
That's revolutionary. I'd watch that shit all day long.
That's a great. No, that's fine. No, that really is fine. It is fine.
I absolutely love that. No matter what we're talking about, at some point, it's guaranteed. Justin's going to make a turn, a left turn, as it were. But he's always going to take a turn.
Yes.
I'm going to spit in the face of what I imagine is the American opinion, and I'm not sorry about it. But it's the Super Bowl. Dude, it's tough. We've had a lot of stinkers recently.
We have.
The Philly special was probably the last, oh my God, hey, that was a lot of fun. It's a social event. And last I checked, social events aren't really a thing for the last year right now. So it's taken all the punch out of it. It's, hey, cool, two teams that I know is not going to be one of the teams I support because, damn it, I was born a Detroit fan. And there's going to be a ton of stoppages. The halftime show is, maybe it's good, maybe you're running around in a room full of mirrors and lights and you're trying not to have a seizure. Who knows? Right? It's, there is, I've noticed there's more and more a chance of a dud each year, it seems, rather than something that's going to meaningly pay off for me. That said, if the Lions ever make it,
I'm buying tickets.
I will be glued to it. But that's because of a personal interest, not the event itself. Whereas it feels like something ingrained in the culture of America that, like, even not football fans are like, hey, the Super Bowl's happening soon, right? And they got to talk about it. And I constantly hear about it at work. Like, who do you think's going to win the Super Bowl? It's like, you don't know if there's 11 people on the field. Be honest with me. And that's okay. it's okay to not know everything about a sport and still want to tune in for the finals. But for me, it's become that spectacle more than it is the actual substance of the game. And adding 17 teams or 70 games is only going to make it worse because there's going to be more injuries. Congratulations, Roger Goodell.
Well, and I think, gotcha.
So this is, can we name this podcast Rush for President 2024? This is number three.
Absolutely.
This is number three.
Well, I think so. Jay, you just took my train of thought right out from underneath me. Right out from underneath me.
I'm sorry.
Like, look,
I'm sorry,
I've watched actually. The last, other than COVID, obviously, I've watched the last 7-8 Super Bowls with you guys. And I can say the most entertaining moments were, you know, the lights going out for the San Francisco Ravens. We turned the Seahawks-Broncos one off because it was 48-0 at, like, halftime. And I that's what it was. I think it became a spectacle when commercials cost $1 million just to air. And it's that thing. Like, that's unnecessary. But it's because for one day, the demand, you know, demands it. And it's just not the right thing, in my opinion. So I can see it. As someone who played the sport and loves the sport, I'll always love watching the Super Bowl. But I do agree, 9 times out of 10, people spend the next day talking about the halftime show or the commercials more than they talk about, did you see what so-and-so did on the field? Because we did. We had a 6-3 Super Bowl a couple years ago. That's not great. To me, the most entertaining one might have just been the Falcons falling apart to the Patriots just because of that. So, yeah, no, I get what you're saying, and it is that thing. But there is always that, like, one, because you're still going to talk about it and you're still going to watch it. But in reality, and I find myself sitting there going, why am I watching this? I don't care. Yeah. Like, I have no desire to invest my time in this.
Can I throw in an honorable mention? Okay. And it's kind of like a subset of what we're talking about. March Madness brackets and football squares for the Super Bowl. Both of those two things can just be also eliminated from the sports understanding of what we should and shouldn't do, because they make no sense to me. It's like you just said, it's something you do, but at the end of it, you go, why am I doing this?
Well, you should Back understand this, though. It's a way of feeding a gambler's addiction.
That's a big thing. I'll disagree with you. Half. Squares. Get rid of them.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a social thing, and it has merit for that. That it's, hey, it's something fun you can do with people that you know or you work with or whatever. However, there is zero skill inherently because it's all chance. So you're gambling for the sake of gambling, which as a miser scares the shit out of me. But brackets, yes, most of it is just chaos nonsense, but there's some rhyme or reason to it. You know, typically, hey, there's the formula. Two number ones, a number two, and something greater than a three. Hey, we hit it this year, right? And let's pick which ones. And you get to say, like, I predicted that. There's the tiny little carrot, right, amongst the chaos that, hey, I get a sense of accomplishment for something I actually not really did. Obviously, you know, it's these college athletes that are doing it. But I called that, quote unquote. So I think there's a little bit of something there. But squares, dude, stop doing squares.
Yeah.
I've
never been a big squares guy. Well, speaking of, you know, the gambling and all that, it's become a tradition every week. And I kind of look forward to what craziness he's going to throw me every week. I swear, if Russ puts a hat on with dollar bill, oh, I thought he's going to have a dollar bill.
The W is right side up. This time. We're
going to win. Okay. It is time for Sergeant Salty's Bet of the Week.
All right. So full disclosure.
Of course.
I've already bet on this personally, but we'll still do a podcast bet. You could probably just assume that every time we do this, I'm over like 500 bets. So we're in this together, gang. We are going to stick to the hardwood on both sides of this bet. We're just going to go to different areas of the bet. We are going to have to pick a side between the favorite. We're going chalk. The favorite between men's college basketball and women's college basketball. And I already picked a side of this. And I'm going to start on the side that I gambled on. The UConn Huskies. UConn Huskies are minus 190. The rest of the field is Stanford plus 200. South Carolina plus 900. Arizona as the third seed plus 2,000. So in that scenario, you can take UConn or you can take the field. On the other side of the ball, it's the same layout. You got the Zags at minus 200 as a one seed. Baylor, plus 275. Houston, plus 750. And the fucking Northwestern Wildcats of men's hoops, UCLA, 11th seed at plus 3,000. I went with the Huskies. They barely beat Baylor, but they beat Baylor. And that's what is important for me. So my money is on the Huskies. But for you two gentlemen, for the podcast, it's either Zags in the field.
All right. I'm gonna,
or you got to take UConn.
That's great. I'm going to give you some numbers. I'm going right with UConn. Here. And these numbers are going to give you my answer. 1,119 wins against 143 losses for an 88% win rate. 126-20 in the NCAA tournament. Oh, and by the way, 11 national championships. If there's one thing you never bet against, you never bet against Gino Auriemma and the UConn Huskies because they win and they win often. The guy has been there since 85 and he's got 11 national championships since 1995. So he's pretty freaking good at what he does. Give me the UConn Huskies all day. Love me Zags, but you can't bet against Gino.
No, I mean, that's exactly right. The slam dunk pick, pun intended, is UConn, right? Yes, they have a lower implied odds, 65.5 versus the Zags, 66.7. Hey, we're talking 1%, though. So 1%, you're going to throw at the team that literally has the reputation of, no, I can't pick them. They're undefeated, but they never do it, versus the team that quite literally always does it. They've been there. They've kicked ass. They're going to do it again. UConn's the better money and you're getting the better odds. Yeah, that's the better bet.
I love this. So I'm glad that personally and podcast, I will double down this evening. I made $100 on the Pistons losing by 7.5 last night.
Back,
so I'm
baby.
Back. We're going to double down. Oh, I'm back. I made back 20% of what I lost from the Big Ten. Cause I took the Trailblazers 7.5. We are going to double down on UConn. And we're going to watch
all right,
the one.
I love it. All right. Well, before we wrap this up, we are just a few days away from the kickoff of the Masters, a week Jay and I look forward to every year. That might be the most Justin actually texts me back because we're watching this shot by shot as it goes along. But I do want to ask you both this because and obviously we're going to get much more into the Masters next week. It's going to probably be a focal point of the show. But I did send you guys this morning current winner Dustin Johnson's menu for the Masters. And I want to ask you guys, it's 2022. Russ Ivanek just won the Masters. What's the menu the following year for Russ for Masters dinner?
Tequila. And nothing about it, because first off, if I've won anything related to golf, let alone the Masters, we're all getting drunk because the end is near.
Do you imagine the green little card? Tequila. It's an appetizer, starters, side dish, entree, dessert.
Well, no,
and we play tequila in the background. Well, see, the entire
that's
time.
What it would be. Appetizer, tequila shooter, first course, tequila. But where it says family style sides, it would be limes with a question mark.
That's actually the aperitif. Limes. Salted limes.
All right.
Oh my God. That's like. That's a great question, and I'd love to take it serious. I don't know that I have the ability to.
It's totally fine.
Jeez, what would be? I mean, it kind of approaches that like, hey, last meal territory.
It sort of does, yeah.
I'll start off by saying I'm disappointed in Dustin Johnson because as many jokes as I make about his name, there's not enough phallic looking things on that menu. And that's very disappointing for me. You're taking away my material. He did give pigs.
He gave you pigs in a blanket, but it was a very small pig.
I don't know about like, someone with piglet. It feels a little gauche. That's a tough one because I don't, and this one will probably get me killed. I don't like fish. So I wouldn't want anything with fish. So maybe the main is just a really nice steak. Right, and we base it around there. We get some root vegetables. We get some sweet potato worked in there. You stay light with whatever the appetizer is. You toss in some leafy greens because, let's be honest, your system's going to need it with this steak the size of your head coming for dinner. and, of course, for dessert, tequila.
Tequila. Yeah. I like how you said he wasn't going to take it seriously. And they just laid out a lovely dinner that I'm very excited for. All right.
And now I'm hungry. Yeah. Well, thanks.
Because I know he's done it on the video games before, it's 2022. Justin Marcus has to host the Masters Champion dinner, gets to put on that lovely green jacket that they made for him, and is serving what? What is on Justin Marcus's Masters dinner menu?
We're talking hot pockets. We're talking
grilled pizza
we're
rolls.
We're talking cheeseburgers.
Grilled pizza
we're talking
rolls.
Ice cream mozzarella sundaes. Give me strip club dining. I don't care. Like we have to make this fun. This is boring, Dustin Johnson.
Dino nugs.
Give me hot pockets. Dino nugs.
Are you doing this because you don't care or because you have two young children and that's all you eat for dinner every night?
Yes. I'm doing this because I want to have fun at this dinner. This is boring. Give me Wendy's and just put Wendy's on everything. Give me French fries, sea salt French fries dipped in an icy. Frosty, that too. I want to have fun at this dinner. I'm disappointed in the lack of fun in this dinner menu.
Oh, God.
Thank you.
Did you get the answers you were expecting, Aaron?
Those were kind of what I was expecting. Look, I'm pretty easy. Give me a nice, you know, like for appetizers, just some nice finger food, some crab cakes and yada yada. That's great. Give me a nice Caesar salad. And then guess what? All I want is I want some fettuccine Alfredo. Knock it out of the park with that. And then because we've all had it and I know I'm going to get two yums out of this, I'm going to tell my wife to make some apple pies because we both.
Oh, yeah. See, can't go wrong with that apple pie.
Yeah. Arizona pies. And guess what? We might even have some spinach and artichoke dip for the appetizer. No, at the end of the day, this is a more boring menu, but it's just always fun to see. You learn a lot. Like, I didn't know Russ doesn't like fish, which now makes me question why the hell I've ever been to sushi houses with him before. So.
Watch what I order. I slip in some pure veggie ones and, like, a sweet potato roll way more than anyone thinks I do.
Yeah, it's fine. That's fair.
And the tequila.
See, when Russ said that, though, I thought that was an immediate strategy to get everybody hungover for this year's tournament so he can jump out to an early lead again and try to go back-to-back. That's what I saw it as.
That's, yes, the dinner is there's no dinner. Good luck, everyone else. Welcome to the Hunger Games. May the odds forever be in your favor.
Oh, that's awful. All right, well, as always, that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. My thanks to these two for another incredible show. We tried to cover all the bases, tried to hit a home run. Miggy, we tried to be like Miggy, but luckily we didn't stop at second like he did. Still a great time. My thanks to the stat man, Russ Ivanek, for making us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
Oh, it's a blast as always. And I just want to thank you for all of those opening day puns that you fit into that quick little blur. But that was well done, sir. You at least like got a triple on that alone.
Attaboy. And Sergeant Salty, the guy who, you know what, made a very, very smart bet this week. I rag on him a lot for it. This was a very good one. Really paying attention to the numbers. So hope it happens. So hope it hits. Good luck to UConn. Good luck to Gonzaga. I mean, we'll see how it goes. And, Jay, I know you and I, man, we're excited for next week. Masters week.
We're going to be putting on one hell of a show. I'm excited for Masters. Russ hit the cycle today. He's my president candidate.
You have my endorsement forever. It's worth probably not worth a lot, but you have my endorsement. As always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.